Chapter 23. The Gilded Panoply. Igori had only rarely ventured into the fabrication bays, save when there was a revolt that needed putting down, or when something from outside the ship slipped in to cause mischief. If the command deck was the Vesalius's brain, then the factorium deck was the belly of the beast. Raw materials went in and came out as necessary components of function. Frigates such as the Vesalius were designed to be self-sufficient, within limits. The mutant tribes who oversaw the fabrication units worshipped them as divine providers, and treated every cannon shell and replacement fiber bundle as a gift from unseen gods. The stunted creatures fell onto their faces, abasing themselves as Fulgrim stalked through the steam-filled confines of the factorium, Igori following close behind. The constant barrage of sounds and smells assaulted her enhanced senses. It felt as if someone were tapping a nail between the lobes of her brain. If Fulgrim were similarly affected, he gave no sign. "Why are we here?" she asked, hurrying to catch up with him.
"I require armor and a blade."
Fulgrim studied the ancient fabrication units for a moment. Then he bent and removed a panel.
"The repairs will take but a moment." "These systems have been offline for centuries," Igori protested.
"Yes." Fulgrim pulled out a handful of cabling and contact nodes.
"But they still draw power from the ship's systems. The designs are already contained in the databanks. All I need to do is... Ah, there."
Lights flickered across the cogitator panels.
"Reroute the power supply around the obstruction."
Igori watched him as he worked. He did not sweat, despite the heat.
"Why are you doing this?" she asked after a moment. "I told you, I require the proper panoply to go to war."
"Not that, all of it." He glanced at her.
"I could ask you the same thing, cousin." He turned back to his labours. "It is instinct, I think. I see what is broken, and I seek to fix it. I have made 556 minor repairs to this vessel's systems in my time aboard, without Fabius's knowledge. The Vatborn showed me what was wrong, and I fixed it. I made the imperfect perfect, or at least acceptable."
He hesitated.
"But I can do more."
"Why?"
"It is my purpose," he frowned. "Our purpose. We were to make the galaxy better, and they failed."
He shook his head.
"We failed. But I will not do so a second time. I will fix what is broken. I will find my brothers, wherever they are, and I will make them whole again, and the galaxy will be set right."
"The benefactor says the galaxy must burn before it can recover."
"Yes. And I will be the fire."
Fulgrim spoke confidently.
"I am the phoenix and the flame, both, and I will remake the galaxy in my image, as he intended. But every flame rises from a spark."
The fabrication unit groaned, venting gases as it layered metal and spun gold. The light and heat washed over him, and for a moment he resembled a blacksmith at his forge.
"This will be that spark."
His hands clenched.
"I will burn away the sins of the past, all the failures and imperfections, all my crimes."
He hesitated, and she started realizing that his hands were clenched so tightly that blood was dripping from beneath his fingers.
"Ferus, oh my brother, I am sorry. I am sorry that I was not stronger."
His words were soft, and she thought that he had forgotten her entirely. He was a strange thing, the shadow of a demigod given life, powerful but innocent, without the hardness of spirit that came from a life lived rather than merely remembered in some arcane fashion. Whatever crimes his original self had committed weighed on him and drove him. The same drive that was in the benefactor, she thought. She wondered what he might become given time. The packs flocked to Fulgrim, basking in his radiance. They sensed that a greater predator had come among them and had abased themselves accordingly. The mutants and Vatborn as well. The clone was building himself an army down here on the lowest decks. He had been wandering to and fro in the depths, a solitary light in the dark, for weeks now. Whole tribes of mutants worshipped him, at least knew of him. It was almost funny to think of how little these gatherings were noticed by those who called themselves Master. Since they'd left Harmony, the Benefactor and his enemies had waged a quiet war for control of the ship. And all this time, Fulgrim had been quietly taking it for himself, deck by deck, and mutant by mutant. Conquest through conversation, through compassion, as insidious as any plague. Soon would come the red hour, a moment of knives and teeth, and the survivors would follow the will of the victor, as was only right and just. She wondered what the Benefactor would say. This was not his will, but it served his interests regardless. Would he punish them, punish her for her disobedience? Or would he thank her? Fulgrim gave a growl of satisfaction and reached into the blazing maw of the fabrication unit. Something within gave a hiss as he extricated it from the cooling mold. The sword was not an elegant thing, a butcher's single-edged blade, a falchion crafted from scrap. It would have taken her two hands to wield it, she thought, but he swept it out with a grace that belied its shape. "What now?" Igori asked, squinting against the heat of creation. "Now?" Fulgrim flourished the blade and smiled. "Now, cousin, we go to war." Ramos, Bull of the Eighth Millennial, felt the signal as it pulsed through the strands of wraithbone permeating his body. 100 voices singing their way through the sub-dimension, which he was now irrevocably linked to. Crying out in warning, or perhaps simply in amusement, it was hard to tell with demons.
"Do you hear them, brother?"
one of the others growled.
"The Neverborn speak." "I do, Esquire. They whisper that the chattel rises up and the masters descend to meet in war."
He flexed his gauntlets, letting the distortion build.
"Should we intervene?"
Ramos looked at the other noise marine.
"To what end? We have our task, and it is a greater one by far. Let them wage their little war. We participate in a conflict larger than any of them could conceive of."
He turned and cast his voice into the grove, shaping the wraithbone with it. Esquor and the rest of his brothers joined him, each singing to their own audience of roots and winding branches. Their raucous dissonance caused the strange matter to spread like a cancer. The wraithbone within them reverberated in sympathy with that growing through the hull, creating an exquisite feedback loop. The song never ceased, continually running through the solidified warp energy, filling the cacophony with its echoes. Around and around it went, redoubling itself with every circuit. The song perfected itself with every new note, becoming more what it must be. Soon, he and his brothers might even join with it, as their choirmaster, Elian, had so many centuries ago. He had sung them a path to the perfidious Eldar, a path they still followed even now. Elian had been consumed by the song, eaten from inside out by the power of it. The Ur-song, the Shatter song. The song that could crack a universe, or save it. A song of birth and death. Slaanesh's song, begun on the day of the Dark Prince's conception and sung continuously by select choirs ever since. The Aldari had begun the song, and their ghosts still sang it in the depths of the webway. But Ramos and his brothers had their parts as well. They added their voices to those of the dead, the lost and the damned, throughout the continuum of time. A universal choir, all singing in harmony with one another across the vast gulfs of existence, backwards and forwards. Singing the Dark Prince into existence at the beginning, singing to ensure that he had always existed and would always exist at the end. They sang so that the sun might rise and always have risen. Without the song, Slaanesh might cease to be, and without Slaanesh, the song would never have been.
Ramos could not conceive of such an absence, and his mind shied away from the enormity of it. Without the song, he would never have cracked the lunar gate. Without the song, Fulgrim would never have picked up the Lair Blade. Without the song, he might have been condemned to a lesser existence, one more faceless warrior among a legion of such, one more forgotten death yet to be. The swelling frustration of that impossible moment lent strength to his voice, and he thrust his gauntlets forward, the sonic emitters built into his palms blaring their discordant rhapsody.
I will not be chained. I will not be caged. I will not be a slave.
His words hammered the air, urging his choir to greater efforts.
We will not fade away. We will sing. We will always have sung. We will be singing when the final curtain falls. Sing, my brothers, sing!
His brothers sang, and Ramos felt the wraithbone flex and bend, growing and strengthening as it spread through the Vesalius. Like an insect in its chrysalis, awaiting the day it could be free of its old shell. Too, he could feel the ship's agitation as its crew went to war. He felt every stray bolt around as it struck wraithbone, and the warm spray of blood. He could hear the reverberations of their chanting in the dark places of the lower decks. He could see the garish shapes of his once brothers as they reacted to the violence and moved to isolate the tribal bays and access corridors. And he could see one other thing besides. Something impossible and radiant. It came among them as they sang. A great presence, heavier than the world around it, so that it seemed to draw in all light and heat. It stalked golden through the lower decks, and its song, so like and yet unlike their own, pulsed strongly in the depths. It was familiar, that presence, painfully so. Ramos had the nagging sensation that he had felt it before, and whenever it drew too close, their song faltered.
"It is looking at us, brother,"
Esquor said as he ceased singing.
"I can feel it. It senses us and wishes to find us."
He shook his head, and his eyes were full of pain.
"It is him, brother, but not as he is, as he was."
"I know,"
Ramos growled. "Fulgrim. No, not Fulgrim. The dream of Fulgrim. The ship whispered of it, of him, and that whisper carried through the wraithbone like a scream.
Ignore him. We have passed beyond such things."
He started singing again, changing the song slightly. His choir followed suit, and their slaves kept time, howling and shrieking for the joy of the performance. Wraithbone grew thick and strong over the hatches of the bay, further isolating it from the rest of the ship. Whatever lurked on their threshold would stay there, away from the grove and the choir. Away from the song that must be sung. Only when Fabius returned would they reopen the garden. Something drifted towards him out of the heart of the garden, and he turned, still singing. Key stood behind him, watching. That was all it ever did. But in the light of their discordance, the Eldar's shadow danced and leapt weirdly. It changed as it moved, becoming something else again, a stranger shape by far than that of the former corsair. And that shape added its voice to theirs, as it had so often in the centuries since they'd begun. Ramos felt a flush of pleasure as the wraithbone around them sprouted androgynous faces with lashing tongues. He heard the soft laughter of Slaanesh's courtiers as they danced through the garden, twisting it to suit their desires. The Neverborn had come to watch. Gilded talons clattered across his scarred armor, fondling the sonic nodes and conduit splices.
"Sing, Bull of the Eighth, sing so that all the warp might hear you,"
a voice whispered.
"Sing a song of war to accompany the events to come. While they fight their little battles, you wage war against time itself, ensuring the birth of our Lord."
Great half-formed shapes crouched amid the trunks and branches of the wraithbone. Bestial and yet elegant, they carved obscene pictograms into the pallid surface of the trees with the tips of crustacean-like claws.
"Do you hear him, sister?"
one rumbled, lupine fangs clicking in a bovine jaw.
"Do you hear the Primarch vessel call to us without even realizing how the Phoenician will howl to see himself reflected so? I hear him, but we shall not listen. He is not for us,"
the entity behind Ramos murmured. A feminine voice, soft but edged like a razor.
"A different piece from a different game. The laughing god thinks to upset our purpose even now. But our game is below, in the seeds and the sowing." "We could take him, child," another shape growled,
diaphanous robe swirling about its twisted shape.
"Make him fit our game and his. Twist him so that the alchemist is twice damned for the same sin."
It brayed laughter.
"Would that not be a delight? Two phoenixes for the cost of one." "A delight postponed is a delight doubled,"
the feminine voice murmured. It leaned close so that Ramos could smell the perfumed musk seeping from it.
"Is that not so, legionary? Is that not what your maker taught you?"
"Yes," Ramos croaked.
Their voices thrummed through him like electricity, and he heard his choir moaning in pleasure. It was a privilege to hear the Neverborn at their plots and schemes, a glimpse into the beauty that awaited all the loyal servants of the Dark Prince. The pale shapes of demonettes danced among the noise marines, carving beautiful, hateful words upon the facets of their armor with delicate claws. The simian slaves of the noise marines screamed in the forest as the unlucky were devoured by blazing whims made manifest. Each death added a new note to the song, making it stronger and more real.
"He is wise in his youth," the Neverborn said, "as I will be when I am she and she is me. We are all children of a lesser god, brother, and we must set Fabius's feet upon the scintillating path, whether he wishes it or not. We will break his chains of unbelief, link by link, and he will add his voice to the great song before the end. Already, here, he has begun, whether he knows it or not. He will make such wonders in the horrors to come. More wonderful even than us. That has been seen and sworn and dreamed by a thousand seers upon a thousand worlds."
A laugh, husky and painful.
"But first he must see that he cannot go forward and he cannot go back. He cannot escape into the past, and the future he desires will never come to pass. He can only follow the path around and around."
With that, they were gone, slipping away into the dark between moments. Ramos shuddered at the memory of her touch. He had been given a gift, a glimpse of a great pattern unspooling about them. 100,000 fates were colliding here in this moment, and he sang out in joy as one by one they fell away, until only a single destiny remained. A perfect note, caught on the lips of time, echoing outwards, forever. Fabius opened his eyes with a groan. He lay on his back, drifting in and out of consciousness. He'd felt the impact shudder through him, and then nothing for some time. His battleplate systems had redlined and were only now restoring themselves. He passed the time cataloguing his injuries. A dislocated arm, a partially crumpled ribcage, and various contusions and bruises among them. His lungs strained against suffocation, trying to function in the sealed tomb of his power armor. Only when backup systems had kicked on was he able to draw a long breath and clear his head. He rolled over onto his chest, cradling his arm. The chirurgeon twitched awkwardly. Several of its limbs had been snapped off, but its function was otherwise unimpaired. What was left of Diomat lay beneath and beside him. Somehow the dreadnought had managed to cushion his fall, saving him from the worst of the impact. His visual feed twitched in and out, stained with static. He pried his dented helmet off as he sat up.
"Diomat, do you still function?"
he asked as he snapped his arm back into its socket. The resultant pain was almost immediately stifled by an injection from the battered chirurgeon.
Diomat!
Silence. Then a muffled thump from within the dreadnought's battle-damaged chassis. A foul-smelling fluid leaked out of it, running across the unnaturally smooth floor. Fabius recovered torment from where it lay and jammed the haft beneath one of the buckled plates. After a moment's effort, he had prized the damaged sarcophagus open. Effluvia spilled out, sloshing about his legs. Something pale and shrunken lay within a nest of power cables and nutrient feeds, its flesh blistered and blackened.
"You live,"
Diomat croaked in a breathy, weak voice. What was left of his chest rose and fell, leaking black, tarry blood with every exhalation.
"Thanks to you, brother," Fabius said.
Then, more hesitantly,
"Why?"
The wrinkled, ravaged features twisted into a gruesome expression. Fabius realized he was trying to smile.
"I told you I would help you, Fabius. I will help you save our legion, and I have done so."
A shrunken claw rose from the murky soup of the sarcophagus and caught feebly at his shoulder.
"I have saved you so that you might save them."
The bleary gaze sharpened, ruined eyes glinting.
"You must, brother. You are the only one who can. I have always known this, and it has ever angered me. But the time for anger has passed." "Diomat, you must let me..."
Fabius began. There were ways of preserving the inhabitant of a damaged amniotic sarcophagus. The methods were not kind, and Diomat would not thank him, but even so, he was determined to try. The withered hand tightened its grip. The ravaged face twisted.
"No, not again. I no longer fear the pain. I have nothing left to suffer. All that I am has been written. Let it end. Let this moment stand."
Diomat convulsed, frail wreckage battering itself against the sides of the sarcophagus.
"Remember your promise,"
he screamed suddenly.
You promised!
His voice rose to a ragged roar, and Fabius didn't need his senses to tell him the sort of pain that the ruined warrior must be feeling in these final moments. He pulled himself free of the grasping claw, stepped back, and drew his needler.
"I remember. Goodbye, brother. You have my thanks."
He fired, and Diomat's final scream was cut short. The wreckage settled back with a piteous cough. Fabius lowered his weapon. He fancied that it had never felt heavier, though he had known Diomat only a few scant centuries.
"One more link in a broken chain," he murmured.
One more piece of the old legion gone, never to be recovered. But no more. This would be the last. There were others like Diomat, he knew. Old soldiers who would flock to Fulgrim reborn, looking to salvage something of the glories of the past. They would help him train the new generations. They would help him avoid the mistakes that had claimed their brothers. Fabius laughed as he holstered his needler. A few hundred years ago, he had found the thought of rebuilding the Legion to be the sheerest hubris, a waste of time. Now it seemed anything but. He was not rebuilding the old Legion, rather, he was recreating it, perfecting it. The third, as it was, would be destroyed for good. Eidolon and Alkanex and their ilk would be purged from the galaxy soon enough. And when they were nothing more than a memory, his new legion would emerge and set about reordering the galaxy to his satisfaction. A new crusade to lead his new humanity to their rightful place among the eternal stars. A clicking sound drew him from his reverie. He turned, taking stock of his surroundings for the first time. Deceptively fragile-looking columns swept upwards all around him, and ornate archways marked the entrance to recessed galleries. They had fallen to a lower tier. If he strained, he could hear the sounds of fighting drifting down from above. He wondered who would take charge in his absence. The clicking sound came again, louder this time and more insistent. Tiny shapes swarmed out of the dark in vast undulation. Metal scarabs scuttled towards him from all directions in an unending wave. Fabius cursed and struck at the front ranks of the swarm, but the creatures paid him no mind. Instead, they split and moved around him, making for Diomat's remains. Soon, the ancient dreadnought was lost to view, buried beneath a heaving mound of worker constructs. Fabius backed away, tardy scarab scuttling about his feet, hurrying to the feast.
"Even in death, you serve, brother," he murmured.
In the emerald darkness, something gave a harsh, mechanical chuckle.
"A fine gift, one among many you have brought me."
The voice echoed out of nowhere and had an artificial quality to its tone which set his teeth on edge. Metal clanked against stone, growing louder. Fabius turned towards a nearby staircase, torment raised. The sound seemed to be coming from there.
"Who's there? Show yourself." "We are much alike, you and I," the voice continued.
The being descended the staircase, its scaly cloak clattering softly in its wake.
"We see a greater picture than is evident to the lower orders. A canvas made up of past, present, and future. Of that I am sure. We share a magnitude of perception, Chief Apothecary Fabius, Lieutenant Commander of the Emperor's Children Legion. You know my name. It is only polite that you share yours."
Fabius tensed as the being came at last into the light. It resembled the automatons from earlier, but only barely. It was more ornate and heavily armored beneath its cloak and cowl. Ornamentation of gold and azure decorated its frame, and there seemed to be a mocking expression on its fleshless face. It bore a tall, bladed staff, topped by a flickering orb.
"Forgive me, I forget the niceties in my isolation. I am Trazin, called by some the Infinite, Chief Archivist of the Solomes Galleries, Master of Scattered Moments, Lord of the Great Library."
Trazin pointed his staff at Fabius.
"And now, Fabius Bile, you belong to me."